welcome to Brighton Broadcast News for Thursday, July 20th, 2023. Mike Adams here. I appreciate you joining me. I may not have an interview for you today, but I have something else, which is that I use my interview time spot to be a guest with Maria Z on Z Media. Maria Z is out of Australia, and she had me on for an hour. We had a great conversation. I'm trying to get my editors to find that video so we can attach it here as today's featured interview, where the tables are turned. You know, for once, I'm not asking the questions. I'm answering the questions or doing the best I can. But Maria is a great host, so that interview should be here. We'll see. We'll see if I can find it. All right, but we've got a lot of other breaking news as well and some really disturbing things. Let's start with this one. You know how the Biden administration is banning appliances? You know how they banned, or at least they're pushing for bans of gas stoves. And in some states, like New York, gas stoves have been banned in new residential construction. No gas stoves. That's incredible. Well, the Biden administration has a new rule that would prohibit the manufacturing of nearly all portable gas generators that are currently sold in the United States. So this has been covered by the Washington Free Beacon and other outlets. By the way, I'm reading from the Beacon. Not just gas stoves, Biden admin rule would outlaw nearly all portable gas generators. And it says that the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the CPSC, has a new rule that limits the amount of carbon monoxide that a product can emit. And this limit has been set so that 95% of the existing gas generators that are sold on the market cannot comply with this new standard. So this is going to cause widespread generator shortages because they're only given 6 months. The manufacturers are given 6 months to try to meet this new regulation. But normally it would require years of re-engineering and innovation and consumer testing and then, you know, getting the supply chain all cleared out of the old generators and restocked with the new generators and so on. So what the Biden administration is doing is they are trying to use this CPSC rule to essentially outlaw generators. And why are they outlawing generators? Because, and this isn't in the story, this is just my analysis, but it's because they plan to take down the power grid in a false flag operation. Let's call this operation Dark Brandon. How about that? Operation Dark Brandon. I just gave it that name. Darkness, you know, dark meaning darkness, and Brandon refers to Joe Biden. But Operation Dark Brandon would plunge America into darkness, but they would blame right-wing extremism. You've already seen the media narrative where they're setting this up to be able to blame conservatives and so-called extremists with any kind of power grid failure. Alex Jones talked about this on InfoWars as well. It's very clear that the media narrative is being engineered for this. In other words, it's obvious they plan to take down the power grid and they plan to blame it on conservatives. And now we find out they plan to outlaw generators. Now, why would that be? Why would they want people to have no access to generators? Well, a couple of answers. Number one, when people have no electricity, they can't communicate. So you won't be able to charge devices like radios, for example, or, you know, satellite phones. You won't be able to get on the internet because the internet has peer-to-peer content distribution systems like Cordal, which I've talked about before. You won't be able to send and receive emails or visit websites or anything. This is how they're going to isolate everybody from online content and then just force you to tune into, you know, official government emergency channels. Beep, 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 beep. This is an official announcement from the White House. You know, conservative extremists have taken out the power grid. You know, that's what it's going to be. That's what's coming. And that's why they want generators to be outlawed, so that nobody can buy a generator and get back online and communicate with each other and find out that the whole thing is a Truman Show theater operation designed to shore up more power in the hands of the corrupt criminal cabal that currently exists in Washington, D.C. Now, you may recall, by the way, that I have already provided you with a solution to this ban on generators. I've already provided this solution. I've talked about it many times. You know what it is? It's a PTO-powered generator that attaches to the back of your tractor. And you say, what? I don't have a tractor, Mike. Go out and get a little small hobby tractor. Seriously, you probably should have one. I'm just saying. You can move dirt with it, too. It's really handy. You can pull tree stumps out of the ground, whatever. Get yourself a little Kubota. There's also a brand called Coyote, which is spelled with a K. I think it's K-I-O-T-E. I think that's a Korean brand. Kubota is a Japanese brand. Kubotas are very, very good. Very good quality. I don't like John Deere's anymore because they went crazy. And they have the software controls now where you can't start your tractor unless they give you permission from headquarters. So I'm sorry, I can't recommend John Deere's anymore. But Kubota is a great brand. And there are some other brands out there. But you can get a small tractor. And then you get what's called a PTO generator. I've talked about this before. The brand of the generator is called Winco, W-I-N-C-O. They have little generators that just plug into the back of the tractor. So the tractor is the power plant. And a PTO means power takeoff. And it's a rotating like sprocket on the back of every tractor. At least real tractors, not toy tractors. And then this generator plugs into that. And that turns the generator. And then, boom, you have electricity. Now, Winco has a 15 kilowatt version of this. 15 kilowatts. That's a lot of juice. So through this setup, if you have a little tractor, and by the way, the size of the tractor that you need to maximize the 15 kilowatt generator is about a 30 horsepower at the PTO tractor. Okay, so 2 horsepower translates into 1 kilowatt of electricity through this method that I'm describing. You got it? 2 horsepower, 1 kilowatt. So we got a 15 kilowatt generator. You can drive it with a 30 horsepower tractor, you'll get 15 kilowatts. If you drive it with a 20 horsepower tractor, because you can buy those, then you're going to get about 10 kilowatts, which is still a lot. By the way, you can probably run on 10 kilowatts. You can survive on that. So you might only need a 20 horsepower tractor, you see. So you don't need to spend a fortune on a tractor in order to do this. Winco has bigger units, like I've got one that's 50 kilowatts, and then you need a 100 horsepower tractor at the PTO, and I've got that set up, and I used it not long ago, actually, and it worked great. So there's your solution. Now, the Biden regime can't ban those generators. You know why? Because those generators, the Winco generators, they have zero emissions because they have no engines, you see. There's no engine. It's connected to your tractor. It's using your tractor's engine, and the tractors themselves have all, you know, the new emissions controls systems, and you know, they're all EPA regulated right now. So if you go out to a Kubota dealership and you buy a brand new Kubota tractor, that thing's already got emissions built into it. And it's already EPA compliant right now, the way it is. You don't have to do anything different to it. And it's not going to be outlawed. At least, I guess not yet. You know, not until the Biden regime is like, we're going to ban tractors too, you know. We're just going to ban all food and all farming and just, you know, just starve and die. You know, that day's probably coming. But until that day comes, you can go pick up a tractor. You can do this. So if you're wondering, how are you going to provide electricity to your home? How are you going to keep the air conditioning on? That takes a lot of juice. Or maybe how are you going to provide electricity to your neighborhood or your community so other people can come over and they can charge their mobile phones or they can charge their, I don't know, flashlights or emergency devices or whatever. You know, because it's good to help out your community, right? I plan to do that. This is the answer. This is how it's done. And you're converting diesel into electricity. I just want to say it again. You're converting diesel into electricity. So you can stockpile diesel, easy to store, relatively safe to store, because diesel is not very combustible. And I've said this before. I don't recommend you do this, but I've done it. If you take diesel and pour it into a container and throw a match at it, it will do nothing. It does not burn. You have to aerosolize diesel. And even then, it barely burns, and that's why diesel engines rely on compression rather than ignition. That's why diesel engines do not have spark plugs. Did you know that? Diesel engines have no spark plugs because you can't burn it like that. It relies on compression, okay? But we're not going to get into engine mechanics too much here. The point is you can store diesel safely. It stores for many, many years with proper care, and then you can always convert diesel into electricity. You can also convert diesel into mechanical motions through your tractor. So you can buy a water pump that connects to the back of your tractor, and you can actually pump water. You can move water out of a pond or out of a lake or a stream or a ditch or whatever, or a pool. You can move a lot of water. You can convert diesel into water movement. Could that be useful in a survival scenario? Oh, you bet, right? So this is why it's good to have a little tractor and some diesel stored up. Okay, I'm not going to hammer you over this. I'm just saying that they're going to outlaw most generators, okay? So the other takeaway from this is that before this rule goes into effect, it might be a good idea to go out and get a generator if you think you're going to need one. Go out and get yourself a generator. Now, gasoline generators, of course, they're loud. Diesel generators are very expensive when, you know, they have their own diesel engine. But don't forget, you can also use solar generators. And our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store, they also have a website called BeReady123.com. And it's spelled just like it sounds, BeReady123.com. And there they have the solar generator kits, where you've got solar panels and you've got, you know, a lithium ion device with a charge controller and an onboard inverter. And you can store up sunlight energy, and then you can use it as electricity anytime you want. The thing is, you know, these devices don't last as long as just pouring diesel into a tractor. You can pour diesel, you can have electricity from a tractor-powered PTO, you know, for days on end. You can just run that tractor 24/7 and just keep feeding it diesel. Whereas if you have a solar-powered generator, you know, it's going to run out of juice at some point. In fact, it won't take very long because, well, depending on what you're using it for, right? If you're running hair dryers and blenders on it, it's going to use it up. If you're running a freezer on it, it's not going to last that long. But if you're just charging electronic devices and things like that, or powering your laptop, or maybe powering a desktop computer and a couple of monitors, whatever, it should last quite a long while. So that's another option, is the solar generators at BeReady123.com. Oh, and they also sell satellite phones there. It's part of the Satellite Phone Store, so backup comms are also something to consider. But the point is, sorry to keep bringing us back to the main point, which is go out and get a generator before they outlaw these things. So that's something to do. And then also, if you have a local gas station that sells gas that is ethanol-free, it's really important that you use ethanol-free gas in everything, but especially in generators. So ethanol in gasoline is a massive scam. Ethanol is not environmentally friendly. It's this insane government subsidy to the corn industry to grow food but turn it into like bad fuel. And ethanol as a fuel in combustion engines actually destroys the engines. And it does this by making the gasket parts in the engines very brittle, causing them to fail. And if you run regular gasoline with ethanol in it, usually it's up to 10% ethanol. If you run that in a chainsaw, you're going to ruin the chainsaw. If you run it in a lawnmower, eventually you're going to ruin the lawnmower engine too. If you run it in your car, you're reducing the lifespan of your car. And so go out and get ethanol-free gasoline. And if you're going to stock up on a little bit of gas for your generator, get ethanol-free gasoline for your generator. And label it as such. Label it, you know. Usually gas goes in red gas containers. So get yourself a red gas container, but get yourself a white paint marker and write in the white paint on the container, ethanol-free gas, so that you know what it is. And by the way, this is one more reason to store diesel and have diesel engines and diesel tractors and so on instead of gas, if you can, because you don't need some super special version of diesel. All you got to do is just get any diesel you want, basically, and then you pour the antibacterial stabilizing solution into it. It has to be like a biocide type of solution because, well, without going into too much detail, diesel can grow bacteria because of water condensation sometimes inside storage containers. And so the way to stop bacteria from growing in the diesel, which can alter the, you know, petromolecules, you want to use a biocide for long-term storage. So I have personally run diesel engines on diesel that has been sitting in the gas tank for 10 years. I have done that multiple times. So I know that diesel works 10 years later. Does it maybe gum up the fuel filter a little faster? Probably. You know, it might reduce the lifespan of the fuel system, but it still runs. Whereas gas, 10 years later, I don't think it will run at all. All right, a couple other things. I hope that you are planning for blackouts. I'm planning for blackouts, for sure. I'm planning on the power grid going down and staying down for weeks, just in case that's what happens. Now, you probably noticed that right now we are in a crazy heat wave in many parts of the world, not just the U.S. and especially the South right now, but also Europe is in a heat wave and parts of Asia and so on, and even the Middle East. It was some kind of an effective temperature reading in, I think, Dubai right now. That's 150 degrees Fahrenheit. That's I think, temperature plus the misery factor or something. I don't know. But I don't think the actual temperature was that high. But the bottom line is, if you have to survive without air conditioning in this kind of heat, how would you do that? What would you do? So start thinking about that now in case this thing happens during a heat wave. But also then for those of you who live up north more, especially our Canadian friends, think about what if the power grid goes down in the winter? How do you stay warm? It's actually easier to figure out how to stay warm than it is to figure out how to stay cool. Because even in a cold house, as long as you don't have wind blowing on you all the time, you know, you can surround yourself with sleeping bags and clothing, and you can make like a rat's nest around you of insulative materials, even if you have to just take like rolls of toilet paper and unroll them like a rat and then just make like a little toilet paper nest, which would freak out anybody walking in like, what are you doing? I'm trying to stay warm. This is insulation. You know what I mean? It's better to have a sleeping bag. But if you don't, you could do things like that. You can rip up, you know, newspapers or whatever, and they are insulative, which is why mice use them, by the way, for insulation. But the bottom line is, in the summer, in hot areas, it's very difficult to stay cool. So you're going to need water. You're going to need to have things like, you know, water on a rag that you can maybe put over your neck or head or something and use the evaporative cooling features, because today's homes are not built for air circulation. They're not built to live without air conditioning. And the homes will just heat up. And they'll be like ovens, and you won't be able to live inside. You're going to have to live on your back porch in a lot of areas, like, let's say, Arizona, New Mexico, you know, Texas, whatever. And if you're living on your back porch because your house is cooking inside, then now you're actually camping out on your own property. And that has a whole new range of issues to deal with. You're going to need a proper camping setup, some kind of a tent. But those cheap camping tents that you buy on Amazon, they don't let humidity out of the tent. So you'll have humidity building up inside, and eventually you get mold. So what you really want is a canvas tent. Canvas tents are a lot more expensive, and you need to know how to set them up. And so you just get into this whole list of questions and survival planning and so on. You're going to need to cook outside. You're going to need to poop outside. You're going to need a shovel, you know, all these things. And then if something goes wrong, what do you do for emergency medicine, right? So we can't get into all that here right now today. I'm just encouraging you to start thinking about these things. If the power grid goes down, how do you not die of heat? Okay, good question. Also, another important thought in all of this when it comes to money. So you notice that I've been recommending three things right now, right? Gold, silver, and crypto. In a power grid failure scenario, crypto doesn't work, right? You can't get online. It's nothing. Now, it doesn't mean you've lost your coins. When electricity is restored, they'll still be there, right? So crypto is an important part of preparedness. But the grid down scenarios explain why you also need off-grid, offline types of value, precious metals, gold and silver, right? Or ammunition, garden seeds, things that you can barter, things that you can trade, you know. Probably vials of iodine would be very valuable at some point, or just antiseptics, or maybe even just toilet paper, come to think of it. So make sure that you're ready for an offline scenario. Let's call it, you know, the Dark Brandon scenario. make sure you've got a means of exchange. Junk silver coins are a great choice in that arena. And then if the power grid is up, then we can all use crypto, even if the banks are down. Now, we've got a story here about the banks that's going to, I think, underscore the importance of getting your own money into privacy crypto that you have custody of and that you can control, because the banks are rigging the system against you in ways that will shock you. And here's a story from a website called Decrypt.co. And here it is. Brazilian CBDC, that's central bank digital currency, of course. Brazilian CBDC allows the government to freeze funds of the individual users. This discovery has been made by a software developer. So this is a blockchain developer, Pedro Magalhães, however you pronounce that in Portuguese, discovered the function and took to social media to demand answers from the central bank. So a blockchain developer has reverse engineered the code of the CBDC and has discovered an unsettling feature. The government has built in the ability to freeze funds and to adjust balances. So in other words, this is exactly what I've been warning about. The CBDCs that are pushed by governments and central banks are going to be dishonest ledgers. They're going to cheat. I mean, of course they're going to cheat. They're cheaters. They're scammers. They're criminals. They're cartels. They're banksters. Of course they're going to cheat. Well, you think they're going to have an honest ledger where they can't cheat? Oh, no, never. They've been cheating so long in the traditional finance realm, you know, printing money, more money, just print, 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 trillions here, trillions there. Well, you think they're going to give up that power just because they move over to digital currency? No, they have to build in their cheating. And so they have. So Pedro Magalhães is the founder of a consulting company called Iora Labs, and he was reviewing the API of this monetary authority code on the GitHub account for this, and he says he found this functionality in the API. And then there's a crypto news outlet in Brazil called Portal do Bitcoin, I guess, that confirmed the findings. And this guy's named Barbosa, who confirmed the findings, and he said, quote, "The ability to freeze or to arrest amounts held in the system is actually protected by current legislation in Brazil, according to the central bank." So Magalhães later confirmed that the official response from the central bank is that they can do this at any time for any reason. And that Brazilians are scared, says Decrypt. Due to the nation's financial history, in the 1990s, the country's president froze finances for all Brazilians for 18 months. 18 months. All right, now, if you're living in America or Canada listening to this and you think, oh, there's no way the government would freeze our bank accounts, except Canada already did that to people who donated to the trucker protest, the truck convoy. Remember that? They froze their bank accounts. And right now, even in America, the government has the power to freeze the bank accounts of anyone at any time for any reason. The State Department or the IRS, or probably even the DOJ, whoever, they can just issue an email to any bank and just say, hey, this person is under investigation for possible ties to, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Shut down their accounts. Freeze it, you know, and the banks will comply. Instantly. This is why when the day comes that they're going to do this to me, I'm going to have nothing but $5 left in there. It's like, go ahead, freeze the $5, you freaking thugs. This is why I'm exiting the traditional financial system. I'm getting out. I'm already halfway out, by the way, thanks to Kraken.com. I've been on Kraken, buying crypto and getting it off of there. And I've been buying gold and silver and Get out of the banks, man. I've been very public about this. I'm not going to say the amounts, but this is my after-tax money that I've had in the bank accounts, and I'm just not putting it there anymore. This is my savings, my personal savings, okay? So it's all going to be gold and silver and crypto, and maybe more bullets, too, on top of that. I do need to get more ammo, because you can never have enough. So let's say gold and silver and copper and lead and crypto probably is the, because I like the copper rounds, the hunting rounds that are copper, like the Vor TX rounds. I think those are from Barnes bullets because they have expanding tips and they're made out of copper. So anyway, copper has a self-defense function. Okay, so gold, silver, copper, lead, and crypto. So if they can freeze the bank accounts of all Brazilians for 18 months, which they already did, and by the way, similar thing has happened in Venezuela, in Chile, in Mexico, and, you know, just the history of the world. Well, then they can do that in America, and they will. They will do it in America. So this is proof that the code of the central bank digital currencies, the code has a built-in cheat system for the central banks to selectively freeze or alter the amounts for anybody at any time. So it's not just that they could freeze how much money you have on deposit. They could change it. They can change it. They can just log in from their central bank and say, boop, 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 beep, boop. Let's see. Little Johnny here, we need to just take 95% of his funds, leave him with nothing. You will own nothing and eat the bugs. Right? So, boop, 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 beep, boop. Yeah, it's old computers from the 1980s. And then, boom, all your money's gone and you are eating the bugs. Because that's all you can afford, right? They can do that to your blockchain, you know, your central bank digital currency blockchain. It's not really a blockchain, I guess. It's a centralized ledger. It's a cheater's ledger. So I ask you this question. Why would you use such a system? Why would you trust such a system? It's got a backdoor hack built in. And who has the keys? The central bank has the keys. The same people that have been stealing from you your whole life by printing more money. Of course they're going to keep stealing from you, and they can also print more money under the digital system. And this is why, of course, I have been pounding this issue of if you want honest digital money, it's found in crypto. Now, if you want honest hard money, that's gold and silver, right? And I guess copper and lead, as I just added. But if you want honest digital money, that's crypto. And by honest, what I mean is the ledger can't be changed. So the Federal Reserve, did you know this? The Federal Reserve cannot alter the entries of the Bitcoin ledger. No one can. Not even Bitcoin miners or Bitcoin developers, Bitcoin hackers. They can't. Believe me, they've tried. They're trying every day to hack Bitcoin or, you know, Monero or everything, and they can't do it because blockchain and distributed peer-to-peer currency systems are, of course, immune to such hack attempts, or nearly immune, you could say. There might be vulnerabilities discovered here and there every once in a while, but they get fixed because of the consensus of the system of miners who all want to defend the integrity of the project, of the coin. And so any vulnerability would be fixed pretty quickly. So when the banks freeze your funds, you can still use Bitcoin. So I strongly advise you to consider the role that cryptocurrency can play, or gold and silver for that matter, in saving your assets, preserving your assets. And the online exchange that has treated me with dignity, that has treated me quite well, and that has excellent customer service, I've found, even though this started out badly, but it has turned into something quite positive, and they're called Kraken, K-R-A-K-E-N. Go to kraken.com, set up an account, sign up. If you don't have it already, get in there and do it. You're going to need this. It's good to set it up now. Set it up in advance, and they'll ask you for, you know, your government-issued ID and all this stuff. And get it set up, link it to your bank, so you can move money in and out of Kraken. Because believe me, you're going to need this. At first, you're going to have low limits. So you got to increase those limits over time if you want to move any serious money in and out of Kraken. And then tune into my show, Decentralized.tv, which is the new show with my co-host, Todd Pittner. And we are interviewing top people in the crypto space, people who have privacy coin projects, people who know about a decentralization of food and education and money and knowledge and all kinds of things. And we have a new episode that just got posted, by the way, yesterday. It's episode 5, I believe, which is interviewing a man named Ryan Arriaga about something called the Dione Protocol, which is not really focused on finances so much. It's an attempt to try to tokenize decentralized power production and to make kilowatt hours, or let's say a token representing kilowatt hours, more democratized for the future of power consumption and power distribution. So it's not right now today a super practical type of project, but it is something that has a lot of promise down the road. But it's an interesting interview if you're wondering about the power grid and how you can make it more decentralized and more resilient, more democratized. Well, that's an interesting interview. Check it out. It's on decentralize.tv right now. But we've got other interviews coming up with privacy coin pioneers, and we're going to learn about all kinds of amazing new innovations in privacy coins. Now, privacy coins are projects that no one can tell the balance of your wallet. No one can tell who you've paid, how much you've paid, how much you've received, nothing. Bitcoin is not a privacy coin. Bitcoin is a very public coin. Anybody can go onto the blockchain and see exactly all your Bitcoin transactions and how much you own and what you've spent it on and everything. Whereas privacy coins like Monero or Firo, for example, that's spelled F-I-R-O in case you're curious. We do have an interview coming up on Firo. But these privacy coins, no one can tell your balances. No one can tell your wallet address. No one can link it to you. And so this has a crucial role to play. And privacy coins are almost impossible for any authority to confiscate. Number one, because they can't see that it exists. They don't know it's there. I did a whole podcast on this. It was, I think, yesterday. And you can listen to that podcast. It says, I think, how to make your assets non-confiscatable. And it talks about this, about how privacy coins make your finances basically vanish off the radar. And it's money that you control that no one can get. No one can just, you know, no government can just see it and take it and seize it, right? And no bank can seize it. You have control. And so even when the power grid goes down, you don't lose access to that. Even when banks go bankrupt, you don't lose access to it. It's still there. The minute you can get back online, you still have all your coins on the blockchain. And by the way, even if the power grid goes down in America, all these blockchains running Monero and Bitcoin and Litecoin and everything else, they're still going to run all over the world, by the way. So your coins haven't vanished. The minute you can get back online, boom, everything's back up and running because it is mirrored, you know, 100,000 places on different nodes running all across the world. That's why Bitcoin is going to outlast the dollar. The dollar will collapse. You can quote me on this. The dollar will collapse long before Bitcoin does. Now, we don't know what Bitcoin's value is going to be. Robert Kiyosaki says it's going to go to $120,000 a coin sometime in 2024. My friend John Perez thinks it's going to go down to maybe $4,000. And I don't know. I have no idea. But I do know this. The dollar is losing value every day. And the dollar is not going to gain value. We're not going to have deflation of prices of consumer goods. I don't think so. We're going to have inflation because there's going to be more money printing. We're going to have devaluation of the dollar. So if you're concerned about the value of any kind of currency, you should be concerned about the dollar more than Bitcoin. Bitcoin is going to survive all this stuff. When the yen is done and the euro is done and the dollar is history, Bitcoin still be here. I don't know what it's worth, but it's not going to vanish. So think about that. And then finally, also, by the way, just remember, if you use the central bank digital currency system, you're participating in a system run by cheaters. So if you take any money and deposit it in a CBDC, it's almost like flushing it down the toilet or just, I don't know, losing it in a casino or something. It's like, you know, they're going to cheat you. You know that in advance. So don't put your assets there. Now, perhaps, depending on how society ends up being structured here, perhaps you might have to use a CBDC to pay your, you know, utility bills or something, or to pay taxes. I can see governments mandating CBDCs to pay taxes, right, as some way to kind of force people into it. Well, if that's the case, then only transfer into the CBDC what you owe in taxes, not a penny more. Because they can take it from you. They can just say, oh, well, while we were here collecting our taxes that are due, we saw you had all this extra money and we thought, well, maybe those are our taxes too, so we took those. And then you're thinking, whoa, they just ripped me off again. They just took all my money above and beyond the taxes. And so you call the IRS and they're like, the hold time is 16 days. You write a letter. Oh, the letter response time is 2.5 years. Oh, you got to file a form to request your money back. What is it? Form 2736B-7. The response time will be 37 months. You know, at some point you're just like, forget it. It's not worth it. So don't put money into it, into any CBDC, if you don't want the government to just take it from you. Because they will do that. That's why it's good to have privacy crypto, by the way. Like Monero, for example. You got a Monero wallet, which I have. You know, a certain number of coins in that wallet. Just sitting there. I have it in cold storage offline. And let's say you need some cash in order to buy some groceries or something. Well, then you take whatever you need out of Monero and you can, through a platform like Kraken, you can sell it for cash and you could transfer the cash to your bank account where you have your debit card or something, or you could just get cash out of the ATM and go buy your groceries. But if you don't need that money, don't hold it in the banking system. At least that's my strategy at this point. I'm keeping assets in self-custody until I need to use them to buy things. And then I'll convert them into cash or whatever, and then I'll buy things with them. Or pay things, you know, like utility bills, like I said. But my bank account balances are all going to be really close to zero from this point forward. Because if it's whatever's in there can be taken from you. There's a side benefit, by the way. It also makes you less likely to be sued. You know that? Because if somebody wants to sue you for whatever reason, because, I don't know, your tree dropped fruit on their car because your driveway is close to their driveway or whatever, your neighbor's mad because their car got all fruity, and they want to sue you, so they might hire an attorney to run your credit report, look up your assets or something, and it all comes back zero. That attorney's probably not going to take the case. And like, your neighbor doesn't even have any money. It's not even worth suing. Yeah. That's because your money's in Monero, which can't be found by other attorneys. You know that? Now, there is a risk of loss in Monero, especially if you lose access to it. Like, if you lose your seed phrase, you could lose the whole wallet. If that happened, and then even a court ordered you to show your Monero balance, if you've lost your seed phrase, there's nothing you can do about it. You just have to tell the court the truth. Judge, I lost my seed phrase and I have no idea how much was in that wallet, but it's gone forever. That would be a horrible thing to happen. Just make sure that doesn't happen. Make sure you save your seed phrase so that you never have to tell somebody that you don't have any money in Monero and that it cannot be found or recovered at all. That would be horrible. So take all precautions. All right, changing the subject now. We're talking about chlorine dioxide. We've got some updated news on chlorine dioxide. I want to thank my source who gave me the following piece of research, which is quite fascinating. And this is research from the year 2021, and it was published in the Journal of Bacteriology and Mycology, which, you know, mycology, which is the study of, I guess, fungi, right? And it's an open access journal. And here's the title if you want to look this up, but I don't know on exactly what website you'll find it, but here's the title. MRSA, which we pronounce MRSA. This is a superbug in hospitals, right? So MRSA eradication using chlorine dioxide. And it's from the Da Vinci Biosciences Research Center in Cyprus. And the author is George Georgiou. It's like a double George sandwich right there. George Georgiou. And here it is. Antimicrobial resistant infections like MRSA currently claim at least 50,000 lives every year across Europe and the U.S. alone. with hundreds of thousands of more people dying in other areas of the world. In 15 European countries, he says, more than 10% of bloodstream Staphylococcus aureus infections are caused by methylene-resistant strains, which is MRSA, M-R-S-A. That's what it stands for, methylene-resistant strains, or Staphylococcus aureus, with several of these countries seeing resistance rates closer to 50%. That's why it's called the superbug, because, you know, the antibiotics don't kill it. Moreover, while the number of antibiotic-resistant infections is on the rise, the number of new antibiotics is declining. It is therefore imperative that new novel treatments of AMRs are sought, and this is the premise of this research, using natural substances to eradicate MRSA that do not create further resistance. Chlorine dioxide used in vitro has been our main focus of this research, as it was the most effective compared to other natural substances tested. So, pretty interesting, right? So, what if you have somebody who's been infected with a superbug at the hospital, some kind of MRSA, and they're dying and the antibiotics don't work? And the hospital's like, "There's nothing we can do, go home and die." Which is what they tell people. How crazy is that? So in this research, let's see, they tested concentrations of chlorine dioxide of just 0.5 ppm, half a part per million, with exposure times of 30 minutes to 30 seconds. So the reduction of the number of cells, of the MRSA superbug cells, at the highest concentration and the highest time, all right, 30 minutes at 5 ppm, okay? This was the highest concentration, the highest time. The reduction of MRSA was 99.99%. Wow, that's really effective. But 5 ppm is quite a bit of a stronger concentration of this, right? And that's 30 minutes of time. So they tried to go lower and lower. So they went down to 30 minutes of time of 3 parts per million and 2 and 1 part per million. And at 1 part per million, 30 minutes, it also killed 99.99% of the superbugs. So they had to try shorter amounts of time. So they tried 15 minutes at 1 part per million. Killed 99.99%. So they're like, man, this stuff is really effective. We got to try shorter times. So they tried 5 minutes, and they went down in the concentration to 0.5 ppm, right? So half a part per million for just 5 minutes. What was the result? 99.99% of the superbugs were killed in 5 minutes. So they're like, man, we got to try even smaller. 4 minutes, 3 minutes, they did 2 minutes, same results, 99.99%. They finally went down to 30 seconds at 0.5 parts per million. Guess what the results were? 99.99% reduction in MRSA. You got that? How amazing is that? Again, 30-second exposure at half a part per million kills almost 100%. So they conclude that the efficacy of chlorine dioxide against MRSA has been shown consistently with growth inhibition of 99.99% to 100%, even in the smallest concentrations of half a part per million, right? So they say, given the proven safety of chlorine dioxide in animal and human experiments to date, they say there's an urgent need for high-quality clinical trials to determine the efficacy of chlorine dioxide with individuals infected with MRSA. All right, that's from the study. They're saying we need to be treating infected humans with chlorine dioxide and running those clinical trials and determining the effects, because it's very safe in animals and humans. Remember, I give chlorine dioxide to my chickens, to my dogs, to my goats. And in fact, this morning I took chlorine dioxide myself. I just did the drops of A and B solution in water. I just did 6 drops this morning. I was feeling a little bit of soreness in the back of my throat for some reason. So I know that when I get symptoms like that, I just slam some chlorine dioxide. I put that in a cup of water and sipped it over about 10 or 15 minutes. And yeah, it tastes a little bit acidic. And slam that, and guess what? Everything's fine. All good. And if symptoms persist, I would just take ivermectin, personally. Now, I can't urge you to do this. I'm not your doctor. I'm not a doctor. I'm not anybody's doctor, except my own doctor, I guess. But I've said this repeatedly in terms of emergency medicine. What if the power grid shuts down? The hospitals are not available. The pharmacies are not available. What if we're in World War III, nuclear weapons? You know, what if you're in a tough spot? Could you use chlorine dioxide to kill superbugs in a person? Well, that's the question that this study is posing, and it appears that there can be a lot of merit in this. I know that I've consumed chlorine dioxide many times. It's been perfectly safe. There are no side effects that I've ever experienced. So if I were infected with MRSA, a superbug, what would I do personally? Again, I can't urge you to do this. This is not my medical advice. Don't take it as such. You should consider this to be experimental medicine. But me personally, I would take chlorine dioxide. I would try to get maybe my blood level up to something close to 0.5 parts per million, which isn't very much. That wouldn't be difficult to achieve. And then I would let that cruise around the blood, probably kill off all the MRSA. And then I would be MRSA-free. That would be the antibiotic. Now, of course, I agree that we need more clinical trials on this, but will Big Pharma ever study chlorine dioxide in a clinical trial? No, never. Never. Will the FDA ever approve chlorine dioxide as a drug? No, because you can't patent it. It's not a drug. It's not going to enrich Big Pharma. In fact, the government does everything they can to attack chlorine dioxide. They don't want people to know about it. Oh, by the way, the website where you can learn more about it is called the Universal Antidote. And that's the website, theuniversalantidote.com. I'm on there right now, and it says, here's the science behind chlorine dioxide, and there's a reference guidebook, apparently, that you can download. I don't think I've ever downloaded that, but I've been told that in that book, then there are sources of where you can get chlorine dioxide, or where you can get the raw materials to make chlorine dioxide. And you may recall, a few weeks ago, around July 3rd, I think, I actually did a story about chlorine dioxide and one of the patents on it. And I found that the two dry ingredients that are used to make kind of a dry formula of chlorine dioxide, they are sodium chlorite. And then for the acid, there's something called sodium bisulfate, which is used as a pool pH reducer. And so in that podcast, I gave a source, a company name, an online company where you can buy these pre-made pellets, 1 gram each. And you can buy 500 of these pellets for $30. It's pretty amazing. And you can use them on the ranch. And I've been using them ever since, you know, because I have water containers and things for animals. So if I want to like stop algae growth in like a water, some kind of a water container for donkeys, what have you, you know, pop in the chlorine dioxide effervescent tablet in there, and then it purifies the waters, you know, kills the bacteria, kills the algae, and it's also safe for the donkeys. It's safe for chickens. It's safe for dogs. I'm using this all the time. I put one of these now every time I do dishes in my automatic dishwasher. Again, I can't tell you what to do. You make up your own mind. You do your own research. You practice your own safety. But I put one of these little tablets in the dishwasher. And then I'm getting actual chlorine dioxide rinsing and washing of my dishes so that my dishwasher is now a really purifying, sanitizing machine. It's not just using hot water and soap to clean the dishes. It's using chlorine dioxide because, I mean, let's face it, every once in a while, maybe this happens to you, I find a dish that I had missed for a while, or I find like a lid off into one of my smoothies. I'm like, oh man, that lid's been there way too long. It's growing something. You know, have you ever had that happen? Like, oh, that coffee cup's been there for 6 months, right? You ever had dishes that grew something? Of course you have. We all have. Like, man, that lid, it's like an ecosystem. This thing's probably producing its own atmosphere, you know? So I want to kill the bacteria, the mold, the fungi, whatever's in that lid, right? I don't want that to contaminate all my other dishes. So I pop that in the dishwasher, and then I throw in the chlorine dioxide tablet. Man, run that sucker. Put it on high. Put it on the full scrubbing cycle. And when it's done, it's sanitized. It's all clean. It's all good. See? Works better than just hot water. So there are, I don't know, so many uses, thousands of uses for chlorine dioxide. But I just find it fascinating that we have research that shows it kills superbugs. So again, now, in the context of a health emergency, you know, a grid-down emergency, if you've got somebody that's dying from a MRSA infection or an E. coli infection or something, if they're dying and you can't get to the hospital and antibiotics don't work and you're in a Mad Max scenario, you know, you got nothing to lose. In that scenario, would I try chlorine dioxide on someone else with their permission after explaining all this as an emergency last-ditch effort? Yeah, you bet I would. Probably save their life. So, it's good to have emergency medicine in your possession. Just like it's good to have your own finances under your self-custody. Right? See, this is the thing. Think about the commonality of what I'm explaining here. Most people, they don't control their own money. They have to go to the bank and, please give me permission, sir, to allow me to take my own money out, right? Or if they have an infection, what do? They go, the pharmacy, right? They got to go get it from there. Oh, please, Mrs. Pharmacist, allow me to have your little pills with your prescription and permissions, right? All prescriptions are offered in a permission-required context. You got to have permission. You don't have any medicine at home. You got to go there and get it. And of course, you got to give up your ID and your name and your birthday and all this other crap in order to get, you got to have doctor's note, all this permission. You got to have insurance. You got to blah, blah, blah. Well, what if you just had, instead of requiring permission for everything, what if you had self-custody? What if you had your own crypto at home? You don't need the bank's permission. What if you have your own emergency medicine at home? You don't need permission from a doctor or a pharmacist in order to take care of your own health. And this is true with essential oils, with herbs, with certain types of nutrients and medicinal substances. You could grow your own lion's mane mushroom, for God's sake, right? You can grow your own anti-cancer mushrooms. You can grow your own medicine. You can stockpile your own medicine. You can have your own medicine in your custody where you don't need permission. Same thing with food, right? You can grow your own food. You don't need permission to eat okra. At least not permission from me. If you want to eat okra raw, go for it. They're a little slimy, but you can eat them raw. The best way to eat okra, of course, is pan-fried with corn flour, salt, pepper, and bacon grease. Just in case you're wondering, because I am from the Midwest, that's the proper way to eat okra. And when you're pan-frying it, you need to slightly burn it. Okay, I'm just saying. Don't forget the bacon grease. That's what makes it good. So, if you're not eating okra that way, you're not eating okra, is all I'm saying. You get my point, though. Off-grid, you don't need anybody's permission. So think about what we've covered here so far. We've covered off-grid power with, you know, a tractor-powered generator and storing diesel fuel. We've covered off-grid emergency medicine that kills superbugs better than all the antibiotics in the world, as far as we know. Better than the prescription antibiotics, and that's chlorine dioxide, which you can acquire right now. Just be sure to store it safely. You can have off-grid money, which is gold and silver, copper, lead, and crypto. I guess copper and lead are ammo. You can have off-grid, you know, emergency medicine. You can pursue an off-grid or decentralized lifestyle, which is exactly what I teach in the new show, Decentralize.tv. So, you know, there you go. So go to that website, check out the show, sign up for the email list to be alerted when we have new episodes coming out. In fact, we have some really great episodes coming out next week. There's a really, really, well, I think two really strong episodes coming out next week that you will not want to miss. I will guarantee you that. So let me remind you also, by the way, in terms of off-grid food, today is the sale day of Ranger Buckets at healthrangerstore.com. And I think it's only a one-day deal. It might be 2 days. You can try it tomorrow. But I know for sure today, all day, It's $20 off the Ranger buckets at healthrangerstore.com because we are changing up some of the ingredients that go into the Ranger buckets because of supply chain issues. We've had to make some additional replacements, and so we're changing labels and so on. And as a result, we are trying to move out the existing inventory, which is still freshly made, all lab tested, all certified organic, by the way. We've got pallets of the current inventory, but my team doesn't want to confuse our shipping, fulfillment department. They don't want to accidentally mix up the current sets with the new formula that's coming in. So they want to move out the current sets. So you save $20 until they're gone. And right now, people are not going crazy buying food, so it's actually a good time. We have inventory. That's not going to be the case, obviously, when more things hit the fan. But go to healthrangerstore.com right now, and it's an automatic $20 off Ranger buckets, which is a two-bucket set. Again, it's all certified organic. And the food ingredients in those buckets are individually vacuum-packed and shaped into what I call bricks. They're very sturdy bricks. Very long shelf life. Almost zero oxidation because, of course, they're vacuum sealed. And then the bucket itself is a polyethylene bucket that's very rugged, very portable, rodent resistant. I mean, I don't know if I can say rodent proof, but you'd have to have a pretty dedicated rodent. You'd have to have like an insane raccoon with a pocket knife and a screwdriver probably to open that thing up. If you have a raccoon that shows up with tools, it's like breaking into your house with tools or breaking into your shed, then you got another whole different problem than just your food supply. You found like super intelligent raccoon thieves or something. Videotape that thing and post that on Brighteon. You'll probably make a fortune off just people watching the videos. But don't forget, there's a tipping system on Brighteon. You can receive tips in crypto. And we're adding some more coins to that, by the way, next week. But bottom line is these are rodent proof, or let's say resistant, mostly proof containers for the Ranger buckets. And they're also waterproof. They're not fireproof. They will melt in a fire, but they're waterproof. So check it all out, healthrangerstore.com. We appreciate your support. All right, now we're going to jump into the interview with Maria Z. So enjoy that interview. And then tomorrow I've got more new interviews coming for you. And also, let's see, Friday as well. So a lot of good stuff coming up. Thank you for listening. Here's the interview with Maria Z.
We're joined now by Mike Adams. What an amazing human being. We are so, so glad to have him back on. He's been on with us before, and Mike has really just relentlessly been leading the charge in exposing the New World Order, helping people prepare for the times ahead. And let me tell you, we are in a very, very crucial time in history. We're reaching the pointy end. Mike, I'm not sure if you saw the news that just came out of Florida, where they're now law enforcement and Republicans are using the words biological and technological weapon where the COVID injections are concerned. It's made the mainstream media in the local news over there, which means that the globalists could prepare for an attack very, very soon. But first and foremost, thank you so much for joining us and thank you for all your work.
Oh, no, it's great to be on with you. Thank you, Maria, for your work. And you're fearless in covering all of this as well. I'm just glad that we have people like you with us here as part of independent media, which is the only true media remaining in the world. So, I'm happy to cover that. You're talking about the Brevard County, I think, in Florida.
Yes.
The Republicans want to issue a letter to all the other candidates and Republicans in the state to affirm that, yes, the COVID-19 vaccine is a biological weapon, and it is intended to achieve depopulation, as Kamala Harris recently stated over the weekend when she said that in order for children to have clean water and clean air, that we have to have reduced population. So the government is investing in reduced population, which means the extermination agenda
is accelerating. There are multiple methods for that, the vaccine being just one of them. But I know we'll talk about several more.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Well, there is an ongoing attack on the food supply. We have them cracking down again on the Dutch farmers. We have this insane new law that's been brought in here in Australia, Mike. And just to give you a little bit of an overview of this PSYOP, they're trying to change the Australian constitution. They're saying that they want to give the Aboriginal people in our country a voice because they apparently don't have a voice, even though we have many of them represented in Parliament. And the changes that they want to make to the Constitution will be told after we vote yes to them doing it. So already we've had laws. Yes. And so already we've had laws in the state of Western Australia, for example, where they say that if you disturb more than 50 centimetres of soil on your own land, you have to hire an Aboriginal consultant to come and tell you whether that land is sacred or not. So what this is a United Nations land grab of Australia, essentially, pretending that land is sacred and that they care about the Indigenous people, but really just weaponizing them to take the land of Australians. So this it really is the smart city agenda. What are you seeing in terms of similar moves in the United States with smart cities and setting up this infrastructure really for a technological control grid?
Well, first I want to say that no one has suffered more under the cabal of the globalist agenda than the Indigenous populations in Australia and other nations. So the Aborigines, of course, were forced to take the toxic jabs. And we've seen throughout the history of the United States how depopulation efforts have focused on Africa, targeted people of color all around the world. So again, Indigenous populations should be right now, I believe, peacefully rising up and speaking out against the depopulation agenda and not going along with it just because they might be getting for some short period of time some extra benefit of some kind or some extra reparations handout, for example, in California that's being talked about for people of color, to take money from white people and hand it out to people of color and call that justice. It's an insane agenda. And the truth is that all humanity is under attack. So the globalists like to separate us by race and color and ethnicity. But the truth is the attacks are universal. And the depopulation effort is universal. The globalists are trying to exterminate more than 7 billion people right now. And there are various ways, obviously, that they're trying to achieve that. But I want to be sure we cover today the food supply issue. I just did a story on Natural News about 13 nations, including Australia, signing an agreement to engineer a global famine. And this is based on methane emissions, and they will shut down food and farms, and they've declared agriculture to be a threat to the planet. So this is the next agenda. Whoever doesn't die from the vaccines will be subjected to starving to death, and that will affect Indigenous populations disproportionately, by the way, unless they're growing their own food.
Well, Mike, this dates back all the way to the 1960s. That's the earliest documentation that I've been able to find in relation to Codex Alimentarius, which is a systematic classification or changing classification to nutrients, calling nutrients poisons, calling poisons nutrients. And so they're increasing the poisons that they're putting into our foods, this merge of technology and biology, which they're referring to as synthetic biology or biodigital convergence. We've been reporting a lot on that. The whole point is to engineer absolutely every natural form of life and ban anything that's natural. So I'm shocked to hear what you're saying, but at the same time, I'm not. We'll make sure to bring that article up for the viewers as well. So what can people expect? I mean, what are the proposed outcomes or the proposed actions that they're making?
Well, we've seen the beginning of this in the Netherlands, where they've seized thousands of farms and the farmers, you know, erupted in protests, which I know you covered. But that's just the beginning. We're seeing the mass slaughter of cows ordered by the government in Ireland. And we're also seeing, of course, a globalist effort to replace real meat with basically cancer tumor synthetic meat that's grown in giant cancer flesh vats. And then it's harvested and turned into, you know, a so-called beef patty or a chicken nugget type of thing. But you're just eating cancer tumor flesh is what that really is, by the way. So, and if you're not lucky enough to eat the cancer tumor flesh, you might be given a cricket McNugget or of some kind, you know, insect larva and black soldier fly larva. So you're going to be feeding off of insects or a cancer tumor flesh, or perhaps Soylent Green. You know, cannibalism will become a feature of the world as the famine kicks in, and it's all engineered. Again, the shutdown is here. The extreme weather patterns that we're witnessing across the world right now are the result of geoengineering, as Dane Wigington has covered from Geoengineering Watch. I know you've spoken with him. I have as well. He's right on the money.
Yes.
And the crop failures and the droughts combined with floods in other places, it's all designed to create, of course, food scarcity, leading to the weaponization of the food supply. Now, I don't want, and I know you don't want this either to be all doom and gloom. I know we're going to talk about solutions, but there are solutions for food and also for finance. There are ways to have your own money that the government can't see and that they can't control and they can't confiscate. There's also ways to have your own food that they can't easily confiscate, and that's guerrilla gardening, which we could talk about if you want.
Absolutely, please do, because and you're right, but I'm of the opinion, and you and I have had this conversation before, where in order to prepare, you have to consider every worst possible outcome and then prepare accordingly. And if that worst possible case scenario doesn't come to fruition, so be it. You've become prepared and stronger in the process. So I'm not really, when I hear this information, Mike, my mind doesn't go towards fear. It goes to, okay, I need to prepare even better. This is how I think.
Yeah, exactly. And the good news is that there are many things that people can do. So in terms of food, of course, it's relatively easy to learn to grow some amount of food, but don't do it in a way that's recognizable as a garden with nice, neat rows. Instead, practice what's called food forest construction or guerrilla gardening, where you can grow food plants among other plants, even in light forests, in a non-row format, you know, kind of a more organic format. And it doesn't look like a food forest. You can grow, you know, cantaloupe and tomatoes and okra and all kinds of protein and nutrients in ways that don't resemble a garden, so that when the food confiscation troops begin to move from neighborhood to neighborhood, literally taking the food out of your garden and probably spraying glyphosate on your garden in order to stop you from growing food. Because remember, agriculture, they say, is bad for the planet. So if you produce food, you're going to be considered a criminal. And under the National Defense Authorization Act in the United States, signed by Barack Obama in 2012, the government can come along and confiscate all your food, all your seeds, all your fuel, by the way, gasoline and diesel, and cows and any other ranch animals as well. Wow. So that day is coming, and you need to have a guerrilla garden that cannot be easily spotted. Now, in terms of money, either physical gold and silver that you've hidden very well is difficult for authorities to find and confiscate. But something that's a lot more liquid and easy to use internationally is private cryptocurrency. But it has to be private. It can't be just regular Bitcoin, because there's no privacy in Bitcoin. So my focus has been with my new show. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Decentralize.tv. And on that show, we're interviewing all the top pioneers of cryptocurrency that has privacy features, so that the governments of the world cannot see your wallet. They don't know how much you have, and they don't know how you've spent it or where you got it from or who you've sent it to. And these privacy currency projects include Monero, for example, and Firo and others. And they are, I believe, the future of pro-liberty money in a digital format. And happy to answer questions if you got. You want to talk about that
in
more detail as well.
I definitely have questions. Crypto is not something that I've ever really understood very well, but I know that that it's something they want to regulate. So how does it work if you have private crypto and they want all crypto regulated? How would private crypto be allowed to exist moving forward?
Well, they can't stop it. It's physically impossible for them to stop the nodes from running. And even if they somehow declared it illegal in the United States, which would be a violation of the First Amendment, because code is an expression of speech, by the way.
Interesting.
And so is money. It's already been ruled by the Supreme Court. But even if they shut down all the nodes in the U.S., there are thousands of nodes for every crypto project running all over the world. Even Bitcoin probably has the most nodes, you know, hundreds of thousands, I would guess. And so there will be pro-crypto nations in the world, like the United Arab Emirates, which will always welcome crypto. And simply, you can still use crypto anywhere in the world as long as at least, I don't know, two or three nodes are running is really all that's required, not to mention thousands or hundreds of thousands. So governments, they can declare things to be illegal in the same sense that they can declare a man to be a woman, but it doesn't make a man a woman. And they can't actually ban Bitcoin.
That's interesting.
And they right. I mean, you could call it like digital transgenderism attempts, but they fail. It's just like the no, seriously. Or the State Department claiming that, you know, they're winning in the war against Russia. You know, you can issue press releases, but it doesn't stop artillery, it turns out. So
it turns out.
I call Russian artillery is the ultimate fact checker.
Yeah.
it's kinetic.
I think what you're saying is fantastic, Mike, because I'm always looking for ways to support or contribute to building this parallel economy that's growing. And, you know, people are so creative. The globalists really underestimate the human intelligence and the fighting human spirit that will always find a way around their nonsense. It's been happening throughout history. And there's so many of us resisting this New World Order complete takeover that people are really working overtime to find creative ways around this. So I'm very encouraged by what you're telling me. But I do worry about, for example, and I want to talk to you about this, where they've spoken about the possibility, and Alex Jones has been speaking about this a lot as well, of patriots coming against the grid and switching off the internet. And then they'll have to go ahead with what they call cyber COVID. Now, it's either going to be an attack on the grid, or it's going to be, you know, a massive cyber attack worldwide, where the WEF said the only solution is to switch off all of the internet, and the only way to get back onto the internet is if you have a digital vaccine pass. So how can we continue to use the internet and trade in electronic currency, for example, if we can't even connect to it because I'm not getting injected?
Well, as long as there is power, and granted, they could take down the power grid regionally, but probably not permanently, not without crashing all of society. But as long as there is power, and as long as, frankly, TCP/IP functions, which is the underlying protocol of internet traffic, then it's really, really difficult for governments to block packet traffic, you know, IP packets. And there are so many clever, ingenious efforts underway right now for decentralized messaging and decentralized content. For example, there's a project called Qortal. It's spelled Qortal. Qortal.org is the website. Qortal is a decentralized platform for content distribution. And it was founded by Jason Crow, who I've interviewed. There's no central server, and it doesn't use web browsers, and it doesn't use Google technology of any kind. It is its own system. And there are thousands of nodes running all around the world. Well, we funded an open source development project with Qortal to build our video content site, Brighteon, to port Brighteon over to Qortal. And that has just now been accomplished in the last few days.
Wow, congratulations, that's amazing.
Yeah, we haven't even announced it publicly yet, but if you go into Qortal. Yeah, I guess so. So far there's only one video channel that's live on that, which is my own channel. We just chose that for testing, but we're going to be opening up all the other channels as well. So what that does, it creates, and I should say that Mickey Willis, the creator of the Plandemic series, he wants to inject his movies into this platform as well for distribution, because they are then uncensorable and immutable.
Amazing.
They cannot be scrubbed from the internet. Nor can any video that we inject into this system. And we'll put this interview in this system as well. And what it means is that governments have lost, because of ingenuity and cryptography and technology, and also just the cry for liberty, governments have now lost the ability to control everything. They've lost it. That era, which has defined all of human history that we know of, is coming to an end. And out of desperation, the governments of the world are going to try to introduce CBDCs and force people into them. And they've already engaged in deplatforming by colluding with big tech platforms and so on. But these are the last desperate lurches of a dying paradigm of government centralized control. The future will be very different. The future will have decentralized peer-to-peer, more Web 3.0 type of topology of people interacting with each other based on consent and freedom rather than government permission.
And I think, Mike, that people will absolutely flock to this. And these are the reasons I think that to be the case. When Elon Musk took over Twitter, regardless of what people think, the fact is that they've been able to speak a lot more freely than they would on a Meta, for example. So what happened was that people that were completely turned off Twitter, and I had zero interest in using it before, I still kind of have zero interest in it, but I, you know, I'm using it because I can get information out. So many people flocked, so much so, and I know that it was effective, that the impact was so big because Meta unshadow banned me for the first time in maybe 2 years. I gained 30,000 wow. followers in the shortest time after on Instagram, for example, after gaining, you know, 100 followers a week for I don't know how long. So they lifted that they lifted that shadow ban. Truly, on at the rate that I was growing, once they lifted the shadow ban, I would have been at by now over 1 million followers on Instagram. That's how quickly it would have grown. But now they've suppressed it again, and you know it's all happening again. But the point is, I know that it was a threat because Meta panicked and unshadow banned me, knowing. And probably many others, knowing that we would flock to Twitter. Twitter's now also causing issues for people. I'm one of those people. They want my government ID to deal with an impersonator and a scammer, which I said no to. People every which way they go, they're getting squashed. You look at Canada now with the bill that you try, if you're in Canada and you try and look at anyone posting what they deem to be news content, you are not allowed to view their page. It's not even, you know, a false info flag anymore. You simply cannot view it. Rebel News was banned in Canada, the largest independent media platform in the country. So I think that what you're talking about is something that people will really just worldwide, no matter where they sit, flock to because they're sick of being squashed. Mike, they're sick of it.
Right.
How and safe is it?
Well, it comes down to the structure of the topology of the internet. You know, we're talking about Web 2.0 here, which is these hosted platforms where there's a centralized authority in control. And occasionally someone like Elon Musk might gain control over one of these platforms and then unban people like myself. He did unban my account on Twitter. I was banned for, I don't know, 4+ years, by the way, under Jack Dorsey. But the structure is all wrong. You should never have one person in charge, and regardless of whether they have positive intentions or whether you agree with them. So look at technologies like Nostr, N-O-S-T-R. This is a decentralized messaging platform technology. And also, I should say that on top of several different crypto projects right now, you're going to see in the next 18 months, you're going to see peer-to-peer messaging services launch on top of crypto projects. And what this means is just like you have decentralized money transactions, you'll be able to have decentralized messaging transactions, which no one can block, no one can interfere with. Even if they try, they simply can't do it. And so this is moving us into Web 3.0. And Web 3.0 is a permissionless environment where there are not these centralized platforms like Facebook or Instagram, but rather, again, peer-to-peer interactions. And Web 3.0 is just sort of getting off the ground. But what I think is amazing is how the governments of nations like yours, like Australia or Canada and New Zealand, are actually accelerating the shift away from a permission-required environment into a permissionless environment because people have been so extremely censored and deplatformed. And in some cases, they've had their bank accounts frozen in Canada, for example, by simply making a donation to a peaceful group that was protesting government authoritarianism. So the future will be free speech. It will be free, I shouldn't say free money, but I mean money with freedom attached that is private digital crypto. The future will be decentralized publishing. And this future is becoming a reality and we are contributing to it. You know, like I said, we funded this project on Cordal and we're going to be releasing it open source so that others can take that code and build their own video distribution platform. You might want to use it, in fact, Maria, for your network. You might
want to
just copy and paste the code, just change the name and start injecting your videos into it, and you will be uncensorable.
That's amazing.
That's a pretty cool thing.
It absolutely is, Mike. That's you know, it's so encouraging. Again, people have been squashed for so long, and human beings are not cowards for the most part. Especially those who love liberty, they are always going to find ways around this. So I'm so glad that people are. Hey guys, I'd like to take the opportunity while we are talking about solutions to talk about one of our partners. Both Mike Adams and Z Media are ambassadors for alternative communications, as you would all know. And we both chose to partner with the Satellite Phone Store, who offer encrypted devices that will keep you and your loved ones in contact no matter what attacks the globalist pull. Whether it be emergency weather events, power outages, the uncertainty of free speech, laws and legislations, restricted internet-based communications, the Satellite Phone Store's got you covered. Now, since the video that we posted on how easy these are to use and how well they work, which we will also link in the description below, and also in that video, you'll see that you can purchase these products from anywhere in the world, and they will work anywhere in the world. I've got all my gear, including the sat phone, bivy stick, Faraday bag, power bank, and more, and they arrived within a week of me placing my order. There is a very, very high demand on these products, and the Iridium phones are selling out fast, but they are still available on back order. Visit sat123.com/Maria and view their current great promotions on family shared plans for their bivy stick, which is one of my personal favorite devices. It's truly revolutionary. You can actually message or group message anyone you like via satellite without any internet or cell service, and they don't have to have a satellite phone or a bivy stick for you to reach them. It links via Bluetooth to your phone, and if you want an even more secure option, sat123.com/Maria have bundles available with the bivy stick and their encrypted mobile phones that do not belong to any other carrier. If you have any questions, you can also reach the Satellite Phone Store on 1-941-955-1020. The bivy stick also has an elective feature of GPS location services in the time of an emergency, and you can switch this on or off with a very easy SOS button at the bottom of the device. Right now, you can take advantage of these sale prices for you and your loved ones at sat123.com/Maria. One bivy stick at $75.95 per month, including unlimited texting, the Nokia smartphone encrypted by the Satellite Phone Store, and Galileo encrypted messaging services is included in that. You can also get two bivy sticks for $145.95 per month with unlimited texting, the Nokia smartphone, and Galileo encrypted messaging service also. Or three bivy sticks at $209.95 per month with unlimited texting, the Nokia smartphone, and Galileo encrypted messaging services included there also. Head to sat123.com/Maria or call 1-941-955-1020 today and check out not only their current great offers, but also Faraday bags, power banks, and so much more, courtesy of our trusted partners at the Satellite Phone Store. Tell them Maria Z sent you. Back to Mike. It's particularly important when we consider this new news about the globalist push publish the plan for worldwide financial enslavement under a unified ledger. Now, I read this and I shared it with my audience recently, and I was absolutely shocked at some of what's being proposed. Give us a breakdown of this, Mike.
Yeah, so this unified ledger is a proposal from the BIS, the Bank for International Settlements, which of course is the bank of central banks. And this unified ledger proposes to digitize every asset that is currently known, which would include stocks and bonds and pension funds and bank accounts and so on. It would all be stored on this ledger run by globalists. Now, this ledger, unlike the Bitcoin ledger, this ledger is centrally controlled by globalists, and it is programmable or editable, alterable. So what they can do is they can take away your record of ownership of any assets at any time if you misbehave. So you notice how the globalists say you will own nothing and be happy. And you're wondering, well, how will I own nothing? It's very simple. They just hit delete on their centralized, you know, blockchain there. And guess what? You have no ownership any longer, according to the official records, you see. Whereas Bitcoin and crypto are honest ledgers. Let's just talk about Bitcoin for a second, because it's the number one crypto. And even though it's not a privacy coin, but it is an honest ledger, meaning that no government can come along and just print more Bitcoin. So they can't devalue the current Bitcoin that's in existence, that's circulating. And it's a hard limit of 21 million coins. And so those coins will tend to hold value as fiat currencies, which are printed by governments, will tend to, of course, drop to zero, which is where it's all going. But They want a centralized ledger that they control so they can shape your behavior and engage in social engineering under the threat of you losing control over your assets if you don't do what you're told. This is why, if you don't mind me answering, but I mean, interrupt at any time, but this is why crypto, and especially privacy crypto, I keep bringing this up because it's critical to human freedom. It's why it's so important, because when you purchase crypto and take custody in your own wallets, then no government authority can control those assets. They don't have control. They can't confiscate them. They can't ban them. They can't take them from you. You have control, you have custody. And even if the banks fail, or the currency fails, the dollar fails, or platforms fail, or who knows, even if there's World War III, guess what? Your currency still works. In fact, Maria, on the day that the banks freeze, your Bitcoin will still function, because your Bitcoin doesn't need bank permission to function.
Forgive my ignorance, Mike, but what is it backed by? What determines the value?
The intrinsic value of cryptocurrency is its utility. So it doesn't have to be backed by a commodity. And I used to think that too. I thought it would be great if it were backed by gold. And I know the BRICS nations are doing that. But what I've since found out, right. But cryptocurrency like Bitcoin or Monero is backed by the fact that it works, that it functions, that you can send value internationally without restrictions and without censorship. It is non-confiscatable if it's a privacy coin. So it has built-in utility of privacy. And in fact, throughout history, anything can be recognized as money, as having value. In some societies, they use cattle as currency. You would trade cattle with each other to buy and sell things. The dollar is backed by nothing, right? And yet people assign value to it. But it, you know, since 1971, as you know, it's been backed by nothing at all. Crypto doesn't have to be backed by a physical thing. In fact, I'm beginning to understand that that would be a detriment to it, because I don't want to hold a crypto coin that's backed by something, some commodity, and then have a problem with those vaults that are holding that commodity and then watch the price of that crypto fall. I would rather crypto have its own intrinsic value based on it being simply recognized for its utility. And, you know, in the post-SWIFT era, where the United States weaponized SWIFT and cut off Russia, cryptocurrency has more utility than ever before. Because let's say, and here's a very real scenario, Maria, let's say that you want to help a family escape the Donbass region of Ukraine. Maybe they're stuck in a war zone. They still have some internet access, which is still there, but they don't have any money. They need some food. They need a place to sleep. They need to get their children out of there. They need to pay for transportation. You could not transfer dollars to them without probably being flagged as an international criminal by the State Department. They would say you're sending money to Russia, but you could send them Monero or even Bitcoin, and they could use that in order to buy transportation or food or a safe place to sleep. So cryptocurrency works where traditional finance fails, especially when things go bad, like what's happening in Ukraine.
Well, BRICS is about to throw a huge spanner in the works for potentially the US dollar, the entire world's financial system. They announced that they're likely going to be backed by gold. They've got a summit in August. Now, I've spoken to a gold bug, and he says it's not likely that they'll just declare that, because it would actually be essentially a declaration of war against the US, because this is going to destroy the US dollar. So we've got this huge problem, not problem of BRICS. I mean, it's good to have currency backed by gold, but we have the problem of the threat to the world's financial system. So how does, first of all, what's likely going to happen there? What's happening on the BRICS front? And then how does that relate to crypto?
Well, first of all, of course, most international transactions are currently carried out in dollars. And the petrodollar, as you know, I know you've covered this a lot in Saudi Arabia, but now they're moving away from the dollar thanks to the Biden regime. And then that announcement you referred to, the BRICS nations in August meeting to announce, apparently, reportedly, you know, Russia is talking about this, a gold-backed cryptocurrency, which would be a peer-to-peer decentralized crypto that's used to settle international transactions among these countries. Now, officially, there are 41 countries that signed on to that we know of so far. But unofficially, I've been told there are over 100 nations that are prepared to repudiate the dollar. Now, the reason why these nations like Russia and China have gone with apparently a decentralized cryptocurrency solution for international transactions is because it's not bannable, as we've been talking about here. Since it's decentralized and there are nodes running all over the world, it can't be banned. Can't be banned by the United States. So the United States has weaponized the SWIFT system, which was supposed to be a politically neutral international transaction settlement system, you know, until March of 2022, when they cut off Russia and effectively stole $300 billion in Russian assets that were held in Western central banks. So that was a massive theft. The U.S. turned into a bunch of basically pirates, you know, financial pirates, just looting Russia for hundreds of billions of dollars. So Russia and China and the other countries out there, including Saudi Arabia and India and Turkey, by the way, they all realize that the United States and the Western SWIFT system cannot be trusted any longer. That if they want to buy, sell, and trade commodities, oil, food, fertilizer, anything, they need to have a system that can't be shut off just because they didn't vote with the United States in a UN vote. So that's what this new system is. And it's being announced in August, like you said. The rollout may take quite a bit of time, but I would say by sometime in 2024, we're going to see these nations ditching the dollar for their settlement and using this new system, which I believe already exists. It's in the pilot phase right now, or test net, as they call it. But here's something else that's even more interesting. Check this out. How many Americans are actually going to buy coins in this new system because the dollar is losing value every day? How many Americans don't trust the American banking system and would actually have more trust of a Russian and China-run decentralized cryptocurrency system? Because frankly, that system is probably more trustworthy than the U.S. banks and the U.S. dollar and the U.S. Treasury. So we could see a mass exodus out of the U.S. banking system, which would expose the highly leveraged debt instruments that the banks invested in using customer deposit money when interest rates were near zero. So this could cause a Silicon Valley Bank-style collapse to cascade throughout the Western banking system as Americans pull their money out and move it to other things such as crypto or even the BRICS crypto system. There's a scenario that no one's talking about.
It's a very likely one, Mike. What would likely be the repercussions? I mean, people think Silicon Valley Bank scenario, that was just one bank. We're talking about multiple banks. This would sweep literally throughout the West. What could happen?
Well, we're talking about the collapse of the Western financial system, other than a few banks that would be bailed out by the Treasury, no matter how much, you know, Bank of America, JP Morgan, and so on, Wells Fargo. But the other mid-level and smaller banks would be decimated. And then, of course, you can see the narrative already. They would start to blame people who bought gold or crypto, right? So they could use this as an excuse to try to outlaw gold and crypto. But I don't think those attempts will succeed in the long run. Because really, the way you lose your money is by keeping it in the banks. Because it's not even your money. You don't have custody. You don't have control. You know, I was talking about this the other day. You know how you're familiar with 2FA, two-factor authorization?
Yes.
You know, so you log into your bank account and you have maybe a 2FA app on your mobile device, and it tells you to enter this, typically a six-digit number. Well, what if you lose access to that 2FA? You know, that you instantly lose access to all your online accounts and you lose control over those assets. Well, with crypto, you always maintain control. You don't need two-factor authorization to have permission from a bank to access your accounts. With crypto, it's your money under your custody. With a bank, they can always insert some other difficult thing like, oh, we need you to send us your passport again. You know, like you ran into with, I think, was it Twitter?
Oh, or yes, they asked for my government-issued ID to prove that I wasn't the scammer that was scamming people financially.
Right. No, exactly. I was initially banned, by the way, by Kraken.com because they thought somebody was impersonating me. But when they realized the mistake, they reversed that and they apologized and they reinstated my account, and they've been great. But people like you and I who are relatively well known, you know, it's actually even harder for us to have online accounts anywhere because so many people may attempt to impersonate us and it sets off red flags. But yes, even a non-famous person is subjected to the whims of all of these banking institutions and government mandates, which can change at any time, and they can declare emergencies at any time, including emergencies over things that they cause, such as extreme weather events and droughts and floods and geoengineering. So they create the emergency and then they declare the emergency in order to take away your rights and privacy. We saw that in spades during COVID, and they're just getting warmed up.
Well, Mike, you may not be aware of this story. The audience certainly knows what happened to me in February. I was actually debanked and they refused to provide me with a reason. It coincided with a hit piece that 60 Minutes did about me specifically. Well, it was about another topic, but they included me as someone who's radicalizing the Australian people towards domestic terrorism. So, yes, absolutely insane. I'm hardly a terrorist. But basically, I was debanked at the same time, so I don't have proof that it was because of that mainstream media hit piece. I don't have proof that the banks were colluding with the mainstream, but I do have proof that ING specifically is a partner of the World Economic Forum. So was that their reason, me exposing all of the WEF stuff? I don't know. The point is, I've realized, not for me, but for the whole of the population, how quickly something that you say or do under the current system can cause you to be debanked. What will happen when there's a central bank digital currency or this unified ledger or both, a social credit system, digital ID, everything interconnected? You will not be allowed to even think freely without having your entire existence shut off.
Right. Well, exactly. Think about what the governments are doing right now. They're taking away speech, your right to speak. They're now attacking food and farms, as we talked about earlier. They're engaging in a war on nitrogen in the Netherlands. And nitrogen is found in animal urine, by the way. So that's how they say nitrogen is bad, which is insane, because nitrogen is you know, an important part of fertilizer to grow food. They're also at war with CO2, which is necessary for photosynthesis for all crops and all rainforests. And so without CO2, the entire planet dies, by the way. But of course, they're at war with CO2. They're at war with the sun. They want to block the sun and darken the skies, which also blocks photosynthesis, by the way. They're at war with privacy. They don't want anybody to have privacy. They're at war with your right to have custody over your own money. There's a narrative war against gold. There's a war against Christianity and God. They're at war with humanity at every level. And so their goal is to make sure that you can't have food or money or speech or any of these other critical things that are necessary to survive. And why are they destroying all these things that you won't even be able to have a farm? Because, of course, it's about global extermination of the human race. Okay, this is global depopulation. It's a planetary scale agenda to ethnically cleanse planet Earth of the human species. That's what it is.
So in the next few minutes, Mike, that we have left, talk to people about what you genuinely see coming down the pipeline, because this is what I've said publicly. We have so much that's, I feel we're coming to the pointy end. I feel like there is so much truth coming out. You have, you know, the attacks increasing massively on the leaders of the resistance, if you will, and it's been happening more and more. You know, just look at the mainstream media response to something like Sound of Freedom, for example. They're so protective over pedophilia and child sex trafficking, for goodness sake. You know, so, oh, child sex trafficking is QAnon. Are you kidding me? This is a known fact that this occurs. Do you want to protect it? So anyway, I mean, just everything that's true and right and good is getting attacked, and the walls are building of, you know, silencing individuals, but the people aren't giving up. I haven't declined in audience numbers. People are still interested as they were, you know, six right. months ago.
If not more,
correct. So I think they underestimated the power of the people. How do you think they might fight back and try and squash us? What do we need to be prepared for in the immediate future?
Well, I think the big picture is like this. So your audience is going to explode, and so will mine, and so will alt media when the next major event takes place. It could be the great reset of a debt implosion. It could be a grid down attempt. You know, it could be World War III, whatever. Lots of things. It could be the next pandemic. Whatever it is, more people are going to wake up, just as what happened with COVID. Now, there's a bifurcation of the global population. There are those who are gullible and who are sort of low-hanging fruit for depopulation by the globalists. Those people will likely die, and that will include probably billions of people. If we emerge from all of this after a decade with, let's say, more than 4 billion human beings still alive, consider that a success, because it's highly likely that the globalists will succeed in their view in killing at least one out of two people on the planet. But the silver lining to that is that it's pretty easy to be hard to kill. And what I mean by that is that the first 4 billion people that they kill are not gullible sheeple, frankly, just to be honest, people who believe government is helping them. So they take the jabs and they die, and they eat the toxic food and they die, and they go along with sucking CO2 out of the atmosphere and all the green nonsense. And they're just pretty easy for the globalists to kill off. And frankly, they're not that remarkable in terms of being members of the human race anyway. The other survivors, which is your audience and my audience and so on, we're pretty hard to kill. Not perhaps individually, they can surely assassinate any one person that they set their minds to, but we're hard to kill as a group because we're resilient, we're redundant. We have knowledge and skills about how to grow food, how to carry out emergency medicine, how to achieve financial privacy, how to store assets, how to say no, how to be mobile and resilient, and all these things. And those are the kinds of skills that I teach and that you teach. And frankly, for those reasons, the globalists of the world will not succeed in a total kill of the human race, and there will be many survivors, perhaps billions. And that's pretty amazing news. So I say, let's focus on being, you know, resilient, and let's focus on being able to rebuild a society rooted in liberty and freedom after the collapse of this current system, which is undergoing an engineered collapse. But of course, we have to survive it. So we have to make sure that we don't starve to death ourselves or be overrun by the violence spilling out from the cities. But those are practical matters that can be handled with many things like, you know, garden seeds or ballistic vests or, you know, full magazines of 5.56, for example. So if practical skills really count. Yeah, true. Yeah, I forgot you're in Australia. I'm in Texas, so we freely carry around rifles with full mags. But yeah, that's not available everywhere. I get that.
Well, we do have guns are legal, but they, especially during the COVID period, I know multiple people who had a knock on the door and said, oh, you had a driving offense this time ago. We're actually going to confiscate your guns and your license before a driving offense.
Driving offense?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
That's insane.
You saw a psychologist, I think 5 years ago, the person saw a psychologist for anxiety. You're not mentally stable to own a weapon, confiscated his guns and his license. So yes, absolutely. They made sure to disarm a lot of people during COVID. Mike, we are so appreciative of your insight, all of your knowledge, and really you're pioneering this way forward for humanity, and you always have, because you believe in humanity. You're setting an example for humanity. Please let people know where they can follow you, apart from the HR report, the Health Ranger report on brighteon.com. Where can they find more information, particularly about some of the survival skills that you're sharing?
Well, sure. Thank you, Maria. And I will give out those websites. But real quick, I just want to say that my main mission and my goal for the years ahead is to be in to provide technologies and platforms that help people like you be able to exercise free speech. And so this is why we're investing in these distributed publishing technologies with Cordal and other projects. So even though I have my own channels, I just want you to understand and your audience to know that I'm here to empower independent media. And you know, I just oversaw $500,000 in donations that went out to various indie media groups as well. So we're here to empower people who are telling the truth. And we have a lot of exciting announcements coming up. But if you want to follow my work in particular, of course, I'm on brighteon.com. That's the platform I founded. My work on crypto is at decentralize.tv. And remarkably, you can find me on Twitter right now at Health Ranger. For as long as that lasts, we'll see. But I also have brighteon.social, which is a Twitter alternative that I founded, and it's a great community there. And of course, my main content website is naturalnews.com. So I appreciate everything you're doing, Maria. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you so much, Mike. Always, always welcome on our broadcasts. You're like a breath of fresh air. You really are. God bless, and we'll see you soon.
You too. God bless. Take care. Be safe.
The New World Order has openly declared war on the free people of the world, and now they're telling us to expect catastrophic cyber attacks over the next 2 years. Weather events, no power, grids down, mobile cell services out. Contact your loved ones anywhere, anytime with the satellite phone store. The Bivy is a revolutionary GPS-based device which allows you to send SMS messages via your phone even if you have no mobile or cell service. Galileo will ensure you always stay in contact with Z Media, other trusted information sources, and your loved ones that can update you in real time in the event of an emergency. Don't be caught out and unprepared for the unprecedented times we are living in. Stay 10 steps ahead through secure, encrypted communication. Visit sat123.com/Maria and prepare yourself and your loved ones now.